So, for those of you who were here or weren't here before, so what we got to was the following. Normally, the rule is that you're allowed to coerce someone to bring a karban, but he has to then say he agrees. This is the Gemara's compromise for the following two phrases that appear in the pasuk. One is yakrit, it shall be brought. Right? So from the fact that it says yakrit, which is like it shall be brought, which sounds like, you know, whether you like it or not, the Gemara says that sounds like it's even coerced. Baal karcha. Lirtso no, which you could have read as the will of God, but it reads the will of the person bringing it, it says he has to want. So the Gemara's compromise is, right, kofino to achi yomer rotze ani.
Nice.
The question then became, what about a karban sibur? So we saw three possibilities. The Sifra seems to say, or the Torah Kohanim seems to say, that you cannot coerce a karban sibur. Now one possible way of reading that is the way the writing is understood by the Hasholchan, the Maharid, the way Minchas Kenef understands the Rambam, which is that a regular karban and a karban sibur are exactly the same. Kofen otach yomer rotzani. You force them until they say we want. There's no difference between a karban sibur and a karban yachid. You got to figure out who you're going to force, how you're going to force. But fundamentally, they think it's equivalent. But then the way the Rosh understands it was that no, a karban sibur cannot be coerced. And we saw 5.5 explanations for that. The Rosh himself says it's a ginah. It's degrading. So one possible way of understanding that is an optics question. Right? Meaning it just looks wrong. Like if all, it's one thing to have a single individual who's a bit, you know, not in the mood to do what he's supposed to, so you beat him until he says, okay, I'll do it. That looks bad enough. But if you have thousands, tens of thousands of people who are kicking and screaming, it's...
That's only bad optics for, like, people, not for God.
Right, it's optics. That's what it sounds like. Right, genau. The Minchas Kenef seems to say that no. The problem is the following. You actually need Ratzon Gamur. That for some reason, by Karban Sibur, there's a special requirement of actual will. Why? Right? Is it because it's, you know, it's bad if the whole Sibur doesn't want to do what God wants? Is it because, as several people suggested, we view a Sibur as a corporate entity, and therefore it's a theoretical institution, so you know you can't really coerce it. The rugged chubber said that it was that you can't sanctify. Sorry, that a karban sibur only becomes sanctified when you actually shecht it, and therefore the only reason a regular karban you can coerce is because it's already kadosh. You've sanctified it, now you just have to bring it. Here, it only becomes defined when you actually shecht it. Well, that's just the way it works, because it comes from like the communal funds, so like it doesn't. Ravdani, we saw, suggested that maybe the nature of coercion is that, right? Ravdani Wolf suggested that the nature of coercion is a community over an individual, so it doesn't really make sense to impose such things of a community. We said another possibility was that when you have a lot of people, it's one thing to say that an individual is not a jerk deep down, right? Deep down, like the Rambam says, he really wants to do the right thing. But if you have millions of people, you could say, look, in millions of people, someone's a real jerk. Well, deep down, as deep as you go.
If you say
right? As deep as you go.
Millions of people are made up of single people.
That correct. So you could say that. And that's why I'm saying this is a maybe. Right? This is a maybe, which is saying it's a practical rather than a fundamental issue. And then we saw that some of the Achronim, like the Zayranan, the Magen Avraham, says that maybe this is only by Karban, like the Omer, where it's a matir, right? It permits. So therefore, we don't have to be worried because everyone's going to want their grain to be permitted, so we don't actually have to coerce it, which is problematic.
It's permitted after.
Because it comes, yeah, it becomes permitted after only a few hours anyways, fundamentally. Okay. But what we said, what we left for today was the possibility that in fact, can I erase this? We got this?
Yeah.
Clear?
Yeah.
Can we, is this a machloket? Tanoim, right? So far, we've seen is Machloket had to understand the Torah Kohanim, but now we have to get into the possibility that, in fact, this is simply a Machloket. So if you look now at number 16. So remember, just a little bit of review about the way Chazal work. The canonized oral tradition of the Tannaitic period is... what do we call that?
Mishnah.
Mishnah, thank you. That was maybe too fancy. If I just said, you know, the official text of the tradition from the Mishnah, from the period of the Tannaim, is the Mishnah. The stuff that didn't make it into the Mishnah, the Braitot, so many of those were collected by Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia in another collection which is known as the Tosefta, which is a collection of Tannaitic material that didn't make it into the Mishnah but was collected by, again, by Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia.
Is it canonized the same time?
Pachor Yotev. Right?
Or I'm assuming it would have to be after.
A little bit later, yeah. Not like, that's the thing. More or less you're talking similar time period, not exactly the same. But we're talking same, meaning the material is written contemporaneous. The collection was a little bit later. Okay? That's the Tosefta. So if you look at the Tosefta, this is number 16. The Tosefta said, Mishayashvu b'mikdash hitchilu limashgein Mashkenu Yisrael al shiklehen kidei shiu karbanot sibur krevin mehen. So, what is limashken in Hebrew? In Mishnaic Hebrew? It's to take security. Right? Basically, what does the Tosefta say? They would start coercing, not coercing, like beating, but what would they do? If people didn't want to contribute to the carbon tzibur and give, what would they, and bring the machzeh shekel, which provided the funds for the carbon tzibur, so what would they do? They would start taking their property and saying, like, this is the gap, you know, bring the money and we'll give you back your property. Right? The mashken. Now you could distinguish and say, oh, the Tosefta is talking about forcing bring to bring the money, but once the money's in, then you can bring the karban. You can't coerce for the karban or something. But what you see is the simple shot in the Tosefta is that we do coerce people, at least to bring the funds. And then the Tosefta continues. Mashal echad sh'alta lo makah biraglo. The mashal is someone who has a wound on his leg. V'hayarofei kofto u'mechatech bivsaro b'shvil rapata. And the guy doesn't want to. He doesn't like the pain. He doesn't want to handle the procedure. So what does the doctor do? He holds him down, ties him up, and cuts off the part of the leg. Right, that needs to be amputated. They cut off the skin, cut off the limb, whatever needs to be cut off. Kach amar hakadosh baruch hu. That's what God said. Mashkenu Yisrael shiklehen. Right, coerce, bring, right, make them have a guarantee, security, right, secure the shekel, the machta shekel, kadesh yu karbonot hatzibur krevin mehen. So that the public karbanot can be brought from this money. So that the money can be brought, and the karbanot can be brought from that money to create ritzui, right, to create goodwill between God and the Jewish people.
Yeah. So how much money is the authority is like a Tosefta to have, since it did not make it to Mishnah?
Neither did the Tzarkon.
Right, but for a reason, right?
Neither did the Tzarkon.
Why not? Like, what was...
So, sometimes it's because Rebbe didn't pass him like it. Remember, how often does the Gemara say, well, we don't pass him like Mishnah, we pass him like the Tosefta? It happens, right? Because they say, Rebbe paskened like the Mishnah, so he recorded the Mishnah, but there were other times in the comparisons, the Amoraim agreed with the Tosefta. It happens. So Tosefta and Dafka are important because they were canonized by Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia. They're not totally... and Tarkonim is the same. And the Rambam in general has the position that the Rambam tells you in his Akadama that if there's no contradiction between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, Tosefta, whatever, then he paskins like these things. Midrash Halacha. Others don't, right? Other Rishonim just follow the Bavli, and things that don't make it into the Gemara, they take that as evidence we don't possibly like it.
Right.
Some say, but the Rambam doesn't take it that way. This is a broader question, right? Again, the Rambam thinks that if someone, that something doesn't make it into the Mishnah, but it doesn't contradict the Bavli, doesn't make it into the Bavli, the corpus of the Bavli, if it doesn't contradict the Bavli, we do Paskin that way. So, if you want, you could say that there's no machloket. Right? Meaning you could say, look, to get the money, we force them to pay the money. Either because that's essentially a tax. And taxes, we're coercive about. But the actual bringing of the carbon, once the money's in, so now, either it's now whatever, for whatever reason you want to explain, we don't coerce. Right? So you could say, again, one possibility is just to say, Tosefta says you can coerce funds. Right? But maybe not the carbon. And the carbon, you would say, right, can't be coerced for all the reasons we talked about. But, on the other hand, you could say, on the other hand, you could say what? Guys, on the other hand, what could you say? On the other hand, you could say, remember, the arguments that were made by the Gemara don't go away. Right? I mean, technically, could I solve the stira? Yes, I just defy. But if you want to talk about the rationale, let's talk about the Rashmi Shams for a minute. The Rash says it's a genai. It's just degrading to coerce the tzibur. If that's the argument, does it matter whether you're coercing them at the stage of collecting funds? Right? I mean, there are certain of the arguments that don't work there, right? If you think that coercion is the optics look bad, or you think that coercion is because the tzibur, maybe someone deep down is really bad, or you think that a corporate entity can't be coerced, or you think that yichidim, that the tzibur can force individuals, but the community can't be forced. Any of those arguments, in the end of the day, make sense at both levels, both the level of the taxation for the karbanot and the karbon. So while you could resolve the Tosefta with the Torah Kohanim, many of those arguments you could easily say, once you see that the Tosefta is okay coercing on the collection of funds for the Tzibur, that potentially they would that you could coerce for the Karbon, because they don't buy those arguments.
So it only has to be like a technical thing of why a Karbon itself cannot be.
Right. So if you look at 17, now, the slightly long quote from the Zera Avram. The Zera Avram is Menachem Zemba, I believe. I think the Zera Avram is Menachem Zemba. I think that's what someone told me, but maybe I'm wrong. See, the Zera. Let me make sure I got that right. The Zera Avram. Yeah, Menachem Zemba. Okay, good. I got it right.
Sounds like African.
What?
Sounds African.
Hasidish, actually.
Zemba?
Yes.
It's a weird name.
Where? Okay. Who is Menachem Zemba?
Yeah.
Okay, do his biography. Menachem Zemba.
It's the last two boxes.
Okay, Rabbi Menachem Zemba. Oh, here, English would be nothing. Rabbi Menachem Zemba was a distinguished pre-World War II rabbi known as a Talmudic genius and prodigy. He is known to be fluent in all of the Talmud as well as the works of the later rabbis such as Rabbi Joseph Rosen and Rabbi Simcha Vinz. He was gunned down by the Nazis in the Warsaw Ghetto, lived 1883 to 1943. He's a Hasidic Rebbe. He was, I believe, and his works are very impressive in general. He writes a tremendous amount about Kachim. So you're doing Kachim, suddenly you actually have material. He's awesome. He's really awesome. So the Shud Zera Avram. Now I noted another person you should be aware of. Many of the sources I'm quoting now I got from Rav Dani Wolf, but they're also quoted, and I assume that's where he got it originally. Is there is a monumental work written on the Tosefta by Rabbi Dr. Shaul Lieberman, who was the head of JTS. Professor Lieberman? Saul Lieberman. Anyways, super genius. And he wrote this monumental work on the Tosefta, where he both did the academic work and, you know, corrected the text of the Tosefta and wrote a parish on the Tosefta, and includes a tremendous amount of karos. He knew everything about everything about everything. Just one of those people. So he notes these makaros. So if you look at the Zera Avram, Menachem Zemba writes as follows. He says, Ulan, re'ezer re'iti b'torat kohanim. Look what I saw in the Torah Kohanim. L'irzonchem milameich enkel fenatzibor ba'al karcho. According to their will, which teaches that you can't coerce the community. Da'af bi'achi kofinato achi yomorotzani, etc. Right? Even though we say by a community, by an individual, that you coerce until they say you want, but you don't buy Karban Sibor, like we understood from the Rash.
Does the line itself say to their will?
L'irzonchem, that's the pasuk.
It says plural.
It's a Karban Sibor, correct.
Right.
That's the point. That a carbon zero, we don't do it. Because we don't have the yakriv. And that's where it comes from. So he says, Ubeferish harash mishans sham, kantav. Right? The rash mishans asks, V'ha ditnan beperek alif tishkalim. Oh, actually, you know what? Before we do that, so look back at the rash. Look at number 14. Because the rash mishans asks this. Right? Asks this contradiction. Remember, the Rash Mishans is the person who very much holds up the Sifra that we don't coerce the Tzibur. So he says, "V'im Tomar, v'ha'adit na meperek aleph d'shkalin, mi'yashashu shulchanot b'mikdash etchilu mashkein, ha'inu b'yichidim k'diktani, and mi'mashkein v'yim Yisrael v'geirim, etc." The Rash has two possibilities. He says, when it says in Shkalim that you coerce, it either means that they coerced individuals, but you can't coerce the community, and maybe that's another difference, right? That the level of taxation, you're still coercing individual by individual, but once you get to the carbon, it becomes communal. That's possibility one. Possibility two, he says, he said, alternatively, they would use this method of coercion to speed things up when people wanted to bring, they were just being lazy. But not if they actually didn't want. So, the Rash very much thinks that there is no stira. He says, when we say ein kofin, we mean the karban. When we say kofin, we mean possibility one is each individual when you collect funds, right? So one possible difference is simply that if you want a coherent explanation of why it would be different, you say, because maybe when you collect, conceptually, you're collecting from individuals, it's only once it makes into the communal coffers that it becomes communal, right? Possibility two is, even here, it sounds like, you don't coerce against their will, you can only speed up the process, right? So, based on this, the Rash Mishans has two possibilities. One is to say, really, you're not allowed to coerce at any stage of the process. And when it looks in the Tosefta like you're coercing them to pay the funds, what do you mean? You're just speeding them up. But you're right. If they said we don't want to give, then you wouldn't even collect funds against their will, right? That's one possibility. The other possibility, which is more lumdish, is to say, maybe it's true that all the logical arguments that we made before apply both at the level of collection and at the level of bringing the carbon, except for one problem. Before you collect the funds, you're dealing with individuals. And therefore, if we go back over the arguments, is the optics bad? Not necessarily. Right? The IRS coerces everybody to bring taxes, but they do it on an individual basis. So it's never like the IRS against the United States of America, the IRS against 300 million people in the United States of America. If it's about, so that might solve the optics problem. If it's about the corporate entity problem, the corporate entity might only start once things make it into the government coffers, into the coffers of Beit HaMikdash, and you're bringing carbon seaboard. But while you're collecting from individuals, they're individuals. If you think that the tzibur can't coerce individuals, but the tzibur can't be coerced again, it's okay because it's the IRS collecting from each individual, so at each moment they're only coercing individuals. So the Rosh is arguing that I actually could conceptually distinguish between the stage of collection and bringing the korban, because at the stage of collection, conceptually, you're dealing with individuals, even if the end goal is a communal korban. Right? So that's how the Rosh says that the Tosefta and the Torah Kohanim are not in contradiction. Right? The unique halacha is only once it's made it to the level of communal korban that you can't coerce. So the Zera Avram notes this. So look down five lines, and he says, so first he quotes the Rash, and then he says, "V'zed Sarachian." I'm not sure this is true. Kian etkinen hashekel mikol yachem levatzmo ve'eich yesh baden din tzibor le'in kviya she'en kofen afil yachid shebehem v'afil yerushalmi k'dan om tzalat shkalim heven zed din nidvat yachid. Well, actually, his question I didn't really get, right? His question on possibility two, right? So he asks in possibility two. He says, I don't understand this, because possibility two, what's the problem? This implies, in possibility two, where the Rosh says that maybe all you're doing is speeding up the process, what is he implying?
People want to give.
Well, that too, but what is he implying? In this argument, what is the Rosh saying? In his first argument, he's saying that at this stage,
people don't want.
And no, at the stage of collection, this is yachid, right? This is really a karban yachid. But this one, where he's saying maybe it's only speeding up the process, what does that imply? That even at the level of collection, it's called karban sibur, and that's why you're not even allowed to coerce, right? It doesn't really mean coerce. It just means that you are taking security to speed up the process. But that implies that he thinks fundamentally it's the same as the Tosefta, as the Sifra. So to that, Rav Nachum Zemba said, I don't understand why. This is obviously correct. He says, what do you mean? At the level of collection,
well,
it's clearly collecting from individuals. So what might you answer?
Unless the purpose is what counts.
Correct. Right? What you have to say is maybe it's not about the formal level, it's about the end goal, which could work according to which Svara? I think the Rosh is himself. Remember, the Rosh said it's about optics. It's about Gennai. So you could have argued that, look, you could look at it as if the IRS is collecting from each person individually, but if you have a mass anti-tax rebellion, right, you could say the optics are bad even there. I mean, once it's about optics, optics is easily expandable because it's not a formal question. So I think for the Rosh, the reason he can even entertain this, which is that maybe even for collecting funds, you shouldn't really coerce, you can only speed up the process, maybe that works because according to him, it's fundamentally about optics. And at the level of optics, you could argue that it looks bad. But the Zera Avraham doesn't like it because he says, what do you mean? This is clearly nidvat yachid. So then at the end he says, v'efshar lomar, v'hine b'tam v'mashkin al ha'shkolim v'iti b'kiryat sefer, sher katav z'afin mehed yot v'mashkin al ha'chov, kol shuchen kov gavoa, v'hine l'fid v'av yumtza, etc., etc. So he says, I have a third explanation of how to be miyashim, which is? He said, maybe the reason that you can coerce, even if you define it as a karban sibur, is why? Because collection of funds is a monetary law. You're not beating him. You're just taking a security, which is what you do monetarily. Meaning, you're equating the Tosefta and the Torah Kohanim, except those are different things. Monetary coercion, meaning take security until someone pays, is a completely different category than physical coercion, which is a din in mitzvot. So far we have, let's review, because this is complicated. I'm not pretending this is not complicated. Okay? So again, let's assume for a moment, which is what the Zerat Avraham is assuming, like the Rash, Mishans, which is that the Torah Kohanim really thinks that fundamentally you do not coerce in Karbanot Tzibur. Okay? But now you have the reality that when it comes to the money going into the Karban Tzibur, we do. We monetarily coerce. So now we have three...
But you can say the same thing about individual thing, whereas, yeah, it's money, but it's for the purpose of the mitzvah.
Good, so let's just go through it. So if we want to assume that they're not in contradiction, so how would you do that? So possibility one and three, well, possibility one is to say, and this seems to be the first answer in the Rash Mishans, is that we view it at this moment. Right? Not the end goal, but this moment. At the moment of collection, you're dealing with individuals. At the moment of bringing the carbon, you're dealing with the community. And therefore, all the arguments that we made don't apply at the level of collection. They only apply once the money's in the communal coffers, because now you view it as a communal carbon. Possibility three says, look, there are two different types of coercion. You're mixing up terms. Coercion by karban is coercion of a mitzvah that's physically beating the guy. And there, we care about your will when it comes to a karban sibur and all of the things we talked about. When we're talking about collecting tax funds for the Beit HaMikdash, for the coffers of the Beit HaMikdash, this is a monetary question. The coercion we're talking about is monetary coercion. Right, Mamashkinin. Right, we take your property until you pay up. You know, it's like if your car is towed, they only give you your car back if you pay the ticket, you pay the towing fees, whatever they want. Right, it's not a punishment. It's an incentive. Right, you owe us money. We hold on to a guarantee to make sure you give us the money. This is not coercion. Your car isn't worth it. It's not worth paying the towing fees. We won't necessarily come after you. Right? It's like the difference between a speeding ticket and a parking ticket. You know, like a parking ticket, like, you know, they're probably not going to throw you in jail. They might just up the fines, right? Whatever. I mean, it's fundamentally monetary. There's no criminal activity here.
Speeding ticket, your points off.
Right. Speeding ticket, yeah, you get points, you get whatever, because there's criminal activity involved. Meaning, if you're refusing to bring the carbon, there's criminal activity here, right? We coerce you because you're a criminal. If you fail to bring the money, you know, it's a crime, it's tax evasion, whatever. But, like, fundamentally, right? I don't know if that was a good example. Whatever, right? Basically, this is a debt, right? When we say you're coercing you to pay your taxes to the Beit HaMikdash, it's because we're coercing you monetarily to pay up your debt. That's a different category than mitzvah coercion, where we're trying to get you to do the right thing. So those are three ways of saying maybe the Tosefta works with the Torah Kohen. However, he said that this doesn't work so well if you actually look at the girsa in the Tosefta. Because, what's the girsa in the Tosefta? And this is why he thinks there's a machloket. Right? Because the following version, he just said, is the version in the Yerushalmi. But he says there's one word in the Tosefta, or one phrase in the Tosefta, that makes it sound like we shouldn't try to work them together. Now, what word is that? And this is the one that Daniel picked up on before. Lirtzono. Is Lirtzono and Mechaper. is what is the Tosefta's argument for why you're allowed to coerce?
It says them.
Because, look at it. We tied down the patient to cut off the skin, to amputate. Why? To cure him. And so too by the carbon, what do? Mimnesha carbon and tzibor miratin u'mechaprin ben Yisrael l'shamayim. Meaning the emphasis in the Tosefta is that we coerce them in order to?
For the greater good.
For the greater good of what? Of atonement, of creating goodwill between God and the Jewish people. But what's the problem? If you just focus on that line, I mean, you could defend it with this and say...
That line sounds only for mitzvah.
Right. The language, even though you could defend it...
And you just say this...
Wait one second.
Is the money leads to the mitzvah?
No, okay, for sure. You could defend it and say, because the money will lead to the mitzvah, and we coerce the money state, even though we don't have the mitzvah state. But the Zera Avram's point is you could look at this Tosefta and say, but wait a second, what's the argument it actually gives for coercion? Is it worth coercing monetarily to bring a carbon tzibur, to bring around the good, bring about the goodwill between God and the Jewish people? That sounds, again, you could knock it off with, and say it really means this. But it sounds like what? That the coercion is for the mitzvah itself. For the ratzon, is to create the goodwill, except, according to the other arguments that we saw, is goodwill created with mitzvah? One second, is goodwill created when there's coercion? No. Right? That was the problem. So therefore, the Zera Avraham says, this is conceptually possible. But the language, which is that we coerce for ratzon, for kapara, implies that you're actually coercing for the mitzvah itself.
Then can you just say both? Then you just have two different svaras, but basically you say the same thing. That not the same thing, but according to the actual girsa, you can coerce for the mitzvah, and then logically you can coerce the money because it's not really a punishment.
For sure, you could.
Incentive. So you can coerce both stages, but for two different reasons.
Oh, you could, but remember, he's saying, can you work out the Rosh's position that we don't coerce the carbon stage with the Tosefta that seems you do coerce at the money stage? So he's saying, pop, with three possibilities to defend how you could, right? But he's saying, still, the language, at least, sounds like you're coercing on the level of mitzvah. He thinks. He says, "Mavur dinyan zed mashkin ainu mitorat chov gove rak mishum kapara chiluk mechayu v'chatao chain mashkin vazem mashkin mishum kapara l'vize vada shem mashkin l'hashet chilish kol yado shol katan shari katan labar kapara." So he said, maybe if it's about this, you would only coerce for adults, but when a father is giving on behalf of his child, you wouldn't coerce because the child. That's his suggestion, but that I don't want to get into that.
Maybe,
so therefore,
maybe,
he says.
Maybe there's a difference between the type of mitzvah.
What?
Maybe there's a difference between the type of mitzvah. Like, for example, a korban is a korban for Hashem, versus, let's say, a mitzvah like giving a get is between people and people. Maybe there's a.
You could distinguish, right? You could say that this level, the collection of the shkalim, right? Even if the end goal is this. The nature of the actual nesina is different, right? You have to contribute monetarily to the spiritual funds.
Look, I think it works out with the gear still. Like if you say, right, he says that you can't coerce for a carbon, right? Why? Well, let's say because the carbon is for Hashem, and then if you're coercing him, there's no proper will or intent, and blah, blah. But if you look at the gear still itself, and this is the mitzvah, the example it uses is for the guy, right? We amputate him against his will. But for what purpose? Because, what is the actual, because it's healthy for him, right? That's why we're able to cut him off. So that's a health reason between people. It has nothing to do with God. So, I mean...
Good. So I would have stopped here, right? Again, we're going line by line here. I would have stopped the Zera Emet and said, okay, I hear it. Maybe the language makes it that there is a machloket. Right, maybe there is a machloket, except he then continues and he said, no, maybe even the Rosh would agree, like Daniel, why? Maybe the Rosh would say, no, We coerce for kapara for the money, but we don't coerce for kapara for the carbon. Why? Right? So what would you say? You're saying, no, I can be miyashiv with the language. Why? How?
Because the language applies for people purposes, not directly for God versus a carbon.
Good. So that's sort of what he says. And he says, ulefize yish lomar, svard harashzal, zizeh shapir nitina nashkolim evi torat nidvat yachiv. Also, rach, don't know gufa nitina, the kolechav echad no tenvif neatzmo, evel zedin yachiv. He says, he said, look. He says this very fancy thing according to Rash. He says, I'll say the following. This is true. Meaning, when I force bringing the money, so at some level I'm allowed to do it because it's a yachid. But on the other hand, it's defined as the end of the day is going towards carbon seabor. But maybe coercion at this level, at the collection, is allowed because of the motivating factor of kapara. It's not about creating goodwill. The carbon's about creating goodwill. What is the collection about? Kapara. It's the fact that you actually need cleansing. It's for your own good. So you're right. The actual bringing of the carbon that's supposed to be goodwill has to be done of your own free will. But part of the reason you bring carbon is not just to create goodwill, but is to cleanse your soul of objective metaphysical problems. Maybe even that, even if it is defined as a carbon seabor, you could coerce for. So, I know this is complicated. I said that. But, so as we said, we have a seeming tension where the Sifra says you cannot be kofel carbon seabor as the Rash understands it, when the Tosef, the Yerushalmi, say you can be kofel for the collection of funds. So one possibility is to just say it's a machloket. One reason to say it's a machloket is because the language does seem to be saying that you're forcing for the money. For the mitzvah component of the money. Right? Which would put it in tension, if not in straight contradiction, with the Torah Kohanim. But now we have 3.5 ways of defending the Tosefta together. One is, when you collect funds, it's a collection of individuals. So you can coerce. Once you have it in the communal coffers, it's communal, then you can. That's the first answer in the Rash. Possibility two is, no. Fundamentally it's the same, but you're not really coercing monetarily, you're just feeding of the process. Possibility three, which is the Zera Avram, which is no. You can't use physical coercion, because that's the type of coercion we use for mitzvot, to make you do the right thing. But we can coerce you to pay what you owe, even if the end goal is mitzvah, is karba. And possibility 3b from the Zera Avram is, he said, and even if you want to tell me that the language says that you're not doing it for pure money, but for kapara, he said, I could even divide kapara, because I could say, you can't coerce for goodwill between God and human beings, so to speak, but you can coerce for kapara, which is, you know, is, yeah, which is like metaphysical, right, objective.
But there's still a problem with the Rosh's second answer, that it's speeding up the process, which implies that you he's saying that if they
correct.
Say no, you
so can't. According to this, three of the answers would say that fundamentally the collection of funds is different than the actual bringing the carbon. Number two, in the Rash, will tell you it's not true. That even the collection of funds, because it's aimed at carbon seabor, you can't force that at all, even monetarily. I think the reason to defend that within the Rash is this, is remember, that if you think it's about optics and not formality, it's very easy to say, okay, but optically, right, the Genai factor is the same at all stages of the process, right? That is potential. You don't have to, but you could.
I mean, if you say that, then the other ones don't work.
Correct. For sure not. Right? This is distinct. Right? These three are all following similar models. Right? Because all these are assuming there's a fundamental difference between the collections of funds. Either it's individual versus community, it's monetary versus mitzvah type of coercion, meaning monetary versus physical coercion, or it's kapara versus the creation of goodwill, which is the zera avram. But all of those assume that...
If it's optics, does the size of the community matter?
No, I think it might just be the definition of community. That seems to be what the Rosh thinks. You could distinguish, but that seems to be what he thinks. Now, what would push me to say that maybe there actually is a machloket between the Tosefta and the Sifra?
So if you just read it.
Right, so one is just to say, look, in the end of the day, the Sifra says we don't coerce, and the Tosefta brings you a case where we coerce. Yes, there are different stages, but... And why would I be motivated to do that? So one reason might be, because remember, we have a Rambam we need to explain. Right? The Rambam doesn't quote this. Remember, the Rambam doesn't quote this halacha at all. Correct. That you can't coerce the tzibur. And in general, as the Achronim note, the Rambam thinks that if there's no bavli against a Torah Kohanim, a Midrash halacha, we paskin like it. But if you know that, well, there's a tension in the Tosefta, so then maybe the Rambam just said, the Sifra follows one approach, and the Tosefta goes in a different way, and therefore it's a toss-up, and I paskin like the Tosefta. Right, so that might push you to say, no, really, machloket, don't worry about it so much. Right, that there's a machloket, don't stress. Okay, if you look, turn to the next page, let's finish it off. So look at 20. 20, this is a piece of a tshuva from the Divrei Menachem. The Divrei Menachem is Rav Menachem Kasher. Maybe we've quoted him once this year, maybe. So he says, "V'kavanatau d'biyachid arei kofinato Hashem rotzani, aval b'tzibur lo mahani adekviyafil amram rotzani." Is it tamu? Minale dechadish came halom atam yishum da'anan tzade nichlei kapara. And can kolshke b'tzibur da'anan tzade? He says, "I just think it's wrong. I think it's wrong. I think you can be kofin." And he said, "You know the Rambam's logic that deep down we know you're a good person." The Rosh in the Sifra, yeah. And he says, he said, I don't understand. If the Rambam, he gives you another argument which could defend the Rambam and why the Rambam would think it's not true. So what was the Rambam's argument? Why are you allowed to be kofa in general? By karban or get? Deep down you want to do the right thing. So we had said, maybe that's true of an individual, but not a community. Community, there's too many people, maybe one of them is really a jerk, or maybe the community as a whole.
Well, according to the Rambam, once you say that, you can't coerce individuals either.
So the,
there could be one. That
correct. So the Rambam Menachem just flips it, and he says, no. You know why the Rambam doesn't quote this? Because the Rambam's argument, it applies to a tzibur as much as a yachid. In fact, he says it's the opposite. If I look at an individual, I might look at him and say, no, he really is a jerk. You really think deep down he's good? But if I look at the community as a whole, we tend to say, the community as a whole, its heart is in the right place. Now, you could argue. But he's saying the point is, at the end of the day, the tzibur, we're more likely to judge a tzibur favorably than we are an individual. So if you say it for an individual, and he says, this genai thing of the Rosh, what is this genai? Because it looks bad, so you're not going to bring a carbon tzibur? Who cares about optics? You have an obligation to bring a carbon tzibur. V'od harei mevor v'sifrei. And then he quotes the sifrei, which is brought in Rashi and Pinchas. V'amarta lohem azara leveiz din she'azuru Yisrael etzmidin. He said the sifrei that, again, I said I couldn't find. He says, Rashi quotes it, but I don't have it in the sifrei, which is that you have to warn the Jewish people to bring the carbon. So therefore, we have another sifrei, apparently. And therefore, there's a machlokes. You think it's the Tosefta, you think it's a machlokes of the Sifrei, it's a machlokes. And therefore, we just zap. Right? And therefore, he thinks, you know why the Rambam won't pass in this way? He said, because I don't understand the Rosh. Right? The Rosh doesn't make sense to me. We have a contradictory piece of evidence in the Sifrei. I gave you in 21 the Daf Adaf quotes from the Shara Toar that he says that there seems to be a machloket in the Yerushalmi about this point, right? Of whether, in fact, we define the collection of funds as a carbon yachid, as an act of yachid or tzibor, which would might be, right, this machlokas, answer one and answer two in the Rosh. Right? He says that there's maybe Birushalmi Shte Deyot mitzvah shkalim chashuva ke mitzvah pratit or shechashuva mitzvah klalit. What's the machlokas? Yehuda sover shi mitzvah mutelet al kol yachid b'tor yachid. He says in the Yerushalmi there's a machlokas that Yehuda says this is considered a mitzvah yachid, and the Chachamim say since the end of the day it's going to the tzibur. So rimshi mitzvah mutelet al tzibur kulov just lefoli then it's a pratit shal kol yachid yachid. Right, he says this machlokas that we said before, the two answers in the Rash, he says is really a machlokas in the Yerushalmi. Do you view the collection of the funds as an individual act which eventually leads to a tzibur, or is it considered tzibur from the first moment? And he says, maybe, Lufizev, Shalomar, the Masham Rutarkonim, Kofin Yachid, and Kofin Tzibur, Kavanesh, Kofin Rakam Mitzvah Yachid, Vin Kofin on Mitzvah Tzibur, Lufizev, Shapir, Sharash, Mehadam Mashkin al Shkalim, Sharalach, Chamin, Zabri Mitzvah Shkalim, Hinami Mitzvah Tzibur, Vain Mashkin Allah. And he said, according to this, this is why the Rosh had a problem, because who should we paskin like? The Chachamim who say it is a mitzvah tzibur from the beginning, and that's why the Rosh had such a problem. He said this was the reason the Rosh had this problem is because there's two data in the Yerushalmi, but the one that he was convinced by was the Chachamim who said that even from the first moment it's defined as a karban tzibur, and that's why the Rosh answered, you're right, maybe even at this level, all you can do is speed them up, but you can't force them if they don't want it. Now, this particular law, I just want to point you, this, right, in a less developed form, does appear in Erechin. But talking about individual karbanot, which is Chayvei Erechin, Mamashkinoto, Chayvei Chatot, Vashom, Im Mashkinoto. By Erechin, we do impose these monetary coercions. By Chatur and Hashem, we don't. Have all of Shlom and Mashkinato, Alpha Bishin and Kabbalah, Shi Kratzeh, Shinemar, so no, Kofinato, Shimorotzani. But it's very clear in the Mishnah that is there a distinction between monetary and mitzvah? Yeah, right? I mean, the simple trap in the Mishnah is like the Zera Avram, which is that even when you coerce monetarily, you can't coerce the Karban at Shimorotzani, which highlights. Well, we already saw in the Zera Avram that there seems to be a distinction between the monetary coercion and the mitzvah element of the coercion. Now, the answer here of this, of the speeding up the process, it's not just the Rosh, Tosus quotes it in Rosh Hashanah as well, in number 23, right, where he says, V'yishlomer de'olam shlo avar adayin el dechazin shum mitatzel lahavi, right, right, he said, wait, we speed it up when he's being lazy, and then if we can't, so maybe you would coerce, but this notion of being lazy, right, he says maybe it's just a two-step process. Lazy, so you coerce monetarily. Once he really, really is recalcitrant, then you maybe can force completely. Okay, so let's review that one more time, make sure we got it clear. Okay? So, the way that Rosh understands the Torah's Kohanim again is that you're not allowed to coerce a tzibur to bring a karban for all the 5-6 reasons that we brought. The Tosefta Yerushalmi say that you can coerce to bring the funds to the karban, for the karban to the Beit HaMikdash. So, how do you bring the Ashivet? So, one is to say these are different stages. Collecting funds, it's still defined as individual. Once it makes in communal coffers, it's communal. Though as the Shari Toar notes, this might be complicated, so this seems to be a machloket of Yehuda and the Chacham. Possibility two is, no, you're right, it's defined as communal at this point, like the Chachamim. All you're doing is speeding them up. But you're right, you can never coerce anything of the tzibur. Possibility three, you can coerce on the monetary level, but not on the mitzvah level. That's why you can coerce them to bring the money, but not to actually bring the karban. That is the simple read of the Mishnah, the Zera Avram. Possibility two in the Zera Avram is that you can even coerce for communal kapara, because that's for your own good. What you can't coerce is for the bringing of the karban, because that is about creating goodwill, and goodwill doesn't usually get created under coercive circumstances. The last possibility is to say, no, it's really just a machlokas. Right? The mission, the Tosefta really goes in the direction that we just don't coerce tzivors. And the Torah Kohanim thinks you do, and maybe that's the Shita Rambam. This is the way the Divrei Menachem takes it. Because the Divrei Menachem, right, Rav Menachem Kasher says, based on that other Sifrei that we don't have, but is quoted in Rashi, maybe we paskin you can coerce. Right? And he says, I don't understand, why not? Right? We want you to bring a karban, it's important, you're obligated, what's the problem? Just bring it. And if you think that the problem is that deep down people want to do the right thing, why don't you say about the community? And he basically just says, we don't paskin like this whole lamdus. Right? And that's why the Rambam doesn't paskin that, right? The Rambam doesn't quote the halacha. Because we just don't. Right? We just paskin against this entire interpretation of Torah, of the Torah Kohen. Okay, the last thing I gave you a piece from Rav Samet, who's talking specifically about the Omer. I'll just read it to you, okay? This is what he writes. He writes, the Sifra and the Talmud ever explain the will and the verse is referring not to God's will, as we've talked about, but to the individual. They explain that this expression teaches several halachot regarding the intent of the person offering the sacrifice, all of which are indispensable for the Karban's acceptance. Several commentators adopt this approach as well. Given the fact that this term modifies the individual, l'tzomchem, for your will, referring to the one bringing the sacrifice, the second interpretation better accommodates the simple reading of the text. Additionally, the Torah employs different expressions referring to God's will, response to sacrifice, etc. Okay. The usage of this expression, our verse, however, differs significantly with the other four instances. Right, this is what he thinks is behind the drasha. While the other four appearances involve individual voluntary sacrifices, our context deals with a mandatory offering brought by the nation as a whole. How can the Torah require that a mandatory karban be brought by the will of an entire nation? The Sifra explains that this term is indicating that community at large is not to be coerced with regard to the Omer sacrifice. The obvious question, however, is to what kind of coercion does this refer? Only the representatives of the high court were actively involved in this mitzvah. Whom would they have to coerce? Additionally, why would this sacrifice be singled out for such halacha more than any other obligatory or national offering? According to Rihal, that's Rehuda Levi's general approach, the explanation of the verse is clear. By your will refers to the one detail of the sacrifice that indeed depends on the decision of the nation, its date. Right? He has a totally radical chiddush. And he says, you know what the Sifra means? None of what I just said. Right? He takes a totally different approach, which is, when do you bring the Karban Omer?
Second day of Pesach.
What day is the second day of Pesach?
Tetzai.
Yeah, which is, when do we? How do we figure out when Pesach is? No. Whenever, 16 days after. And when's Rosh Chodesh?
Whenever Sina Melon is.
No! Whenever Beis Din declares it. Right? Whenever Beis Din declares it. And therefore, he has a radical approach. And he says, maybe what the Sifra means is nothing what we've been doing the last 3 days. Maybe it means like the following. All it means is you can't coerce the karban. You can coerce the bringing of the karban, but you can't coerce the bringing of the karban at a specific time because, unlike, let's say, a karban on Shabbos, which depends on it being Shabbos, the karban Omer depends on. His argument is basically like this. Who's responsible for bringing the Karban Omer? The High Court. Who's responsible for determining what date you bring that on? The High Court. And what does L'tzomchem mean? It doesn't mean you can't coerce them. It means
when baked in is that?
When once you can't force Bezdin to bring it any given day because it's up to them to decide when Nisan starts. Once you decide when Nisan is, so fine, you can bring the karban. You have to bring the karban on that day. But God isn't telling anybody what day that's going to be. I see Gavi shaking his head. I'm not sure I'm convinced either, but I put it because it's another interpretation of the Sifra, which is radically different than I think the majority of the Mefarshim on the Sifra. But with that, we finish the question of coercion of karban tzibur, which, like I said, this has been fun for me because I haven't done this in a long time. And you know, I've never done this sugya before, and I haven't done like a new kachem sugya in a long time. And I hope it gave you like a bit of an introduction to a few different sugyos: the purpose of karbana, the difference of tzibur and yachid, nature of coercion in general, v'chule. What I want to do, I think, next, because this is the longest, it'll be a little bit longish, is deal with the question of karbana omer. How do we know that it happens on the 16th of Nisan, mimachar Shabbat? That's like a whole amud in the Gemara on Samachay, but because next week is our last full week, it's a good time to do it. Well, actually, next week, the week after that is pretty full, but it'll be a little bit chaos because
next week is our last full week
before Pesach. I guess the week after that is basically full, also.
Yeah, we're
ready. Oh, you're right. We have two.
Have a full week next week.
I hope so. I certainly hope so. So let's. So what we'll do is the following. For that.